Hi there, and welcome to the Prepare Podcast. This is a Salvation Army Central Territory podcast produced, hosted, and edited by the Women's Ministries Central Women Department. And I'm your host, Sarah McCullough. On the Prepare Podcast, I meet with women of faith and ministry as they share from their experiences and wisdom to prepare and equip us in our faith pursuits and callings. Today starts a series where I meet with retired officers as they reflect back on their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s and beyond, and share what advice they'd give themselves during those seasons. Today, Lieutenant Colonel Marilyn Arnold starts our series off. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Mrs. Arnold. Welcome to the Prepare Podcast.
Thank you, Sarah, for inviting me to do this.
Absolutely. And you heard me say, listeners, Mrs. Arnold. I call her that, as many other people that attend the Corps that we both attend together call her. But some people often call her Colonel Marilyn Arnold. She's a retired officer. When did you retire?
1997. It's been a long time.
Right. But you are busy all the time at the Corps serving. So I feel like you didn't really retire technically, because you're so active in leadership and ministry at the Corps we attend, and such a wonderful example to me. And you've certainly been my mentor in women's ministries, and so it's very appropriate that you join the Prepare Podcast, and that we could glean from your wisdom and your experiences in your ministry and your life to prepare and equip us in our faith and pursuits and callings. So it's a real joy to have you here.
Thank you. I will do my best.
So I'm doing a series where I'm meeting with a number of retired officers and asking them the same questions. And of course, we'll get different responses, which is wonderful because it gives us something really to ponder and consider and think about from your responses. So those questions are: looking back at your years of ministry, looking at your 20s and your 30s and your 40s, 50s and beyond, what advice would you give to yourself in those different decades of life as you are leading, specifically in your officership? What would you tell yourself? So let's first look at, wait, before we dive in, I'd like to hear you introduce yourself and who you are in this stage of life. Would you mind doing that?
Not at all. I actually am, I try to get people to just call me Marilyn. I'm a little bit self-conscious about the rank business because it, while it's very important to me, the years that I served as an officer, I want to be used by the Lord, and I think that the best way is for my friends in our lifetime group at the Corps to be able to call me Marilyn and to think of me as the chaplain of the group and just as one who sits beside them and becomes their friend. So, but I am proud of the years that I served and grateful to God for calling me to be a Salvation Army officer. I found it very rewarding, and I can remember more of the good times than the bad times, and I think that's something that the Lord does for us. It's a favor he gives us, and in my, I refer to my old age, I do want to be relevant. I want to stay current, and so I'll be as active as my physical being will let me. My husband is Lieutenant Colonel Donald Arnold, retired, who has been an extraordinary leader, in my opinion, in the years that we were officers together, and he enjoys fairly good health and is able still to be relevant, I believe, in the pursuits that he has. He does a lot around the home to help me, and he does as much as he can at the Corps and in other ways. Now, my daughter is, everybody says she's just like me when I was 20, 30, 40, and 50, and she is the youth coordinator at the Corps, and her children are remarkable. They, three of them, Stephen, Allison, and Rachel, I'm so proud of them because they love Jesus and they put him first in their lives. They're all very good students and are working toward the goals that the Lord has outlined for them. Some of them they're not aware of yet, but they will become aware of them very soon. Our son Craig is in Belgium at the moment. Hopefully at some point soon they will be returning to the States, but he's married to a beautiful Australian lady, and so we have the advantage of having that culture introduced to our family, and they have three beautiful children, two in college in Oklahoma, so that is a draw to this back to the States, and then they have McKinley still in high school, and they live for Jesus and are active in whatever they pursue in terms of winning people to Jesus and at least living their lives for him and living a testimony for Christ.
Very good. It's good to know who you are and who your people are. So thank you for that. So let's go right into the questions. So starting first in your 20s, what would you, looking back at your ministry in your 20s, what advice would you give yourself during that time period?
Well, Sarah, I was 26 when I was commissioned back in 1957, and I went to be the assistant at a large corps, in fairly large corps in St. Louis, as a single person. I became engaged shortly after I got there, and we were married a year later. And then I went to our appointment and joined my husband in our first appointment in charge. And I had my own group of women there, although in St. Louis we had a lovely large group of ladies. But I was the assistant there, and so I did the kinds of things that assistants do, and picking up and taking home and those kinds of things. It was wonderful. I made some friends and with the ladies. But when I went to my first appointment where we were in charge, they were my ladies, and I loved them. However, I was a little concerned that it was very poor and they were used to doing things in a very, very simplistic, almost backward way. And so I might have put too much effort into trying to bring them to what I thought was a good standard, although when I left that appointment and went on to our next one, when I saw the ladies, they would say, "Oh, we miss what you used to do. Putting a worship center every week for Home League, and making sure that I spoke to every lady and spent a few minutes with her, but always insisting that there be a tablecloth and a centerpiece when we served, and that we wash dishes in hot water and rinse them well and put them away and those kinds of things." I might not have stressed myself, not that it put any pressure on the women, because they went right along with me. They loved it, and they did their best, but I may have put a little too much emphasis on it for me, and I might have been able to accomplish some other things more effectively if I hadn't been. But I enjoyed them, and to this day remember them and remember their names, some of them, and it was a great time being there.
Well, not that I want to discredit what you're mm-hmm. saying, but to give you credit that those touches really can create a space where women feel really at home and welcome and feel special, in my opinion. And I'm not that great at it myself. And really, I feel like I learn something from you every time we do a program and every time we do an event, how to, it's really about making it, in my opinion, the space special and giving value to it so the women feel that they are also of value.
Yes, and I guess that was what I gleaned from them, seeing them at like Home League rallies and at camp and so on, when they would say, "We miss the things that you used to do." And so perhaps it did give them an appetite for that, and hopefully some, particularly the younger ones, will have picked up on it and decided that that was something they could do at home. And I always like the idea that what we do at home should be as important and as nice as anything we would do away from home at the core, especially. So I love the story of the white rose that most of us know, and I just think that it's so important for them to be able to take that home with them and improve things at home as well.
I actually don't know the story of the white rose.
Oh, you don't? Oh, mm-hmm. It's a story that comes out of England of a lady who met someone who invited her to Home League, and at Home League, she was given a white rose because it was her first week. She took it home to a very disheveled kitchen, dirty and smudgy and dishes not done and so on, and put it in the middle of her table. And after she cleaned, she had this incentive to clean things up. And just because of the white rose and because of the atmosphere at the core where she was, and her husband came home very shocked and surprised to see the change. The children noticed the change, and so out of that, they became Christians. They became active, and it was the white rose that did it. And in what I think it's France, where their Home League pin was a white rose.
Oh, really?
And yes, and if I looked and dug around far enough, I probably mm-hmm. would find my pin somewhere. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a.
I sort of am figuring out a way to use that as one of my devotions this spring.
Yeah,
because
I think
we were at our core, we were given some very beautiful silk white roses, and I want to use them and give everybody a vase and a rose, and use that story and. Kind of apply it without insinuating that that's what everybody needs to take it home, but kind of applying it to our lives as opposed to our homes, our houses.
Yeah, there's dignity in,
yes.
in that.
Yeah, and I think that dignity is so important, and I think that the more we treat others with dignity, mm-hmm. The better return we're going to have from them. So that's always, I think, Sarah, one of my goals always in my ministry has been to make contact with people. I just think it's so important that everybody who comes gets greeted in one way or another or by somebody, that so that they become, they begin to feel a part of the group. And so I've always made that a point. Sometimes our ladies, like in my first appointment, they would not go up to a stranger and say, "Oh, I'm glad to see you today." Mm-hmm. And even in our atmosphere today, we have ladies that won't, they're just too shy mm-hmm. about putting themselves out there. And so I always want to be at least one of the ones who makes people feel at home. One in our, just before we, I still have the letter from a lady who said, from the Women's Auxiliary. Now, she was very prominent in the community and very active, and she said, "One of the reasons why I stayed with the Women's Auxiliary is because you always greeted me and made me feel like I belonged to the group." And so I've always felt that that was important, and to the end, I kind of tried to do that.
You still do. You definitely do. So I hear kind of the moral of that, the lesson you learned in your 20s was that not to make it about, not to get lost on why setting it up is important and creating a space or focusing on those things. It's for the women,
right.
And not to get lost on that.
Yeah.
Very right. Good. Okay, so shifting into your 30s.
Yes.
What do you think you would get you advice you'd give to yourself in your 30s?
All right, in my 30s, by then we were in our second core appointment, which started out with 7 people in our first meeting. However, it had been and was probably the second core in the division at the end. But we had a large group, some contentious people that were ladies that were really difficult to get along with. They loved gossip. They loved antagonizing one another. And I can remember one time my husband from the intercom in his office calling down and saying that the ladies needed to settle down, that they were getting out of control. But I think that probably being the peacemaker in that group was really important for me. And unfortunately, there were some ladies that really liked me to the degree that when we farewelled, they wanted to quit. They were not used to officers coming and going because they came when I was there, and they found it very difficult for me to leave. And I think that I would try to figure out a way that that didn't happen, that they got so attached to me that when I left, they were ready to leave as well. That was an important lesson to me. Although that was our last core appointment, but I think that in all of the other places where we served, where I was responsible for groups and so on, that I tried to make that, while I wanted to love them and show them attention, I did not want them to feel like their foundation was dependent on me instead of on the Lord. And so that was an important thing that I learned and that I would do differently if I was 30 again. I think also that I worked very hard. I was, as a young officer, you're the Sunday school leader, perhaps. You might even be a teacher. I led the primary department, and one of the DCs today used to sit on a little bench right in front of me as I led the primary Sunday school, and he sat there like a good soldier. No wonder he's the DC today, I say to him. But anyway, and then we did picking up and taking home, and my husband was firm in the fact that I also was a preacher, and so I preached every other sermon, and so that meant sometimes preparing for Sunday night or preparing for Sunday morning and delivering the message, and then being there for the people, making sure that everyone was welcome. However, that was really hard work. We did not have children, I will say that, and so it made it easier for me to be away from home and to spend all of the hours that I did at the Corps. Or visitation was very important. We went from soldier to soldier and had an outline of those we had to visit, and so that was important. But when I did have children, I wondered how I would have managed all the things that I did. And so I think that I probably would have maybe structured my activity a little bit different. I don't know. It was very difficult for the girl that followed me because she did have young children, and she found it hard to, and people expected
her to,
be like I was, and that made it hard for her, and I felt bad about that.
In your 30s, you transitioned from Corps officer to a DHQ mm-hmm. officer? What position was that?
Well, we went from there to be on the training college staff.
Oh, training college.
And so
okay.
mm-hmm, I was in my mid-30s by then, and early 30s, really. We did finally have a baby.
Yeah.
And so that was a whole different thing, having to be on the job. And we were low on the staff then, and not low on the staff, but we were mm-hmm. not, you know.
Administrative leadership.
Right, right. We were very involved with the cadets and being brigade officers and so on, and with having a baby, and then the next year having another baby. I was pregnant for two commissionings, and that's not a good thing for a staff member. Not in those days. Now it's okay, I guess. But in those days, it was not a good thing to be pregnant 2 years in a row. However, after waiting 8 years, we were happy. Yeah. We were thrilled about it. And so I was petrified to be on the staff. I realized then, and I still realize, what an important place that is. And I was petrified to be there because I wanted to be the best example to the cadets that I could be, and I wanted to give them the best of myself. And so I don't know if I was relaxed enough or not, but I hope I was. And out of that came very good friends, the people that the cadets that we had as in our brigades and in our classes and so on. And I think it was there that I might have gotten more of an appetite to show young officers a good way to present the space, as you so aptly said earlier. And so later, when we went back a second time, and I had more authority, I just made it a priority because I feel like that is such an important part of officership, being able to make the space nice, clean, and as presentable as we can. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I just made it a priority mm-hmm. in my ministry mm-hmm. at the training college. But I just have always felt that that's important. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I feel like it's important.
Mm-hmm. I think there's not one way to view hospitality. But for example, my husband, I feel he has the gift of hospitality. But for him, it's not a hospitable, welcoming space unless it's clean and warm and the blankets are folded nice and the pillows are folded nice. And I'm a little on the other side of, like, as long as I'm just saying, hey, come into my home and sit on my couch, that's mm-hmm. a welcoming space. But he's like, that's not comfortable for your guest. They need to have some drinks out, fruit bowls. Like, it's really interesting. I love that about him. Oh, and it's really grown me in a lot of ways. But I can see the value in, like, you know what? I see the value of that to make someone know that you're special, and I'm gonna take the extra step for you in my home or in the core, you know. So I think there's a lot of value in that as it's tied to hospitality.
Yeah, and that's part of one of the workshops that I used to give. You're doing it not for yourself, but you're doing it to make them feel comfortable and special. And like you did, you went out of your way because you like them mm-hmm. and you wanted them to be in your home or in your core and to feel comfortable there, or to be impressed with what they see. And perhaps if they're not in the habit of it, they might mm-hmm. adapt it to their own lives and to their own way of doing mm-hmm. hospitality.
For example, when I walked in your home, because that's where we are right now, recording at the kitchen table, Mrs. Arnold has lovely placemats out. She had little plates with folded napkins, with coffee ready. And it just was, it made me feel like she put time into this. She knew I was coming and she wanted to show me a good time and welcome me to her table and have donuts ready and coffee ready. And it really made me feel special. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of value in that.
Right. I always hope that that is true. The other thing that I like to stress is that whatever we do away from home at the core for a special event should be part of what we do for our family, because they are by far the most important people in our lives. And so we want it to be nice for them. So I, even now, there's just the two of us, and my husband will say, "Do I have to put placemats on?" And I say, "Yes." Or he'll say, "Why are you putting a tablecloth on?" And I'll say, "Because this is
dinner."
Because I like you. Yeah, because I love you, and I want you to like this. Uh-huh. And so I just think that's important too.
Okay, let's now segue to your 40s. What advice would you give to yourself in your 40s in your ministry?
Well, in my 40s, we were in divisional work. By then, we were DYSs, and we did a lot of traveling. We were expected to be out 3 Sundays a month, and we took our children with us. In those days, you could put a little crib in the back seat of the car and put the baby in the crib and have the other one standing up between the two of you. I realize that's no more, but we did that. I often was greeted at the door by a teenager or an elderly lady who would say, "Just give me your baby and I'll take him. I'll take care of them for you," and so on. And that was okay, although I was a little slow to turn over my baby to somebody wondering how they would take care of her or him. However, it always turned out all right. The Lord took care of us and provided for us. In terms of being in my 40s, we were very busy, and I was torn between what to do about my children, who were little at that time, and what to do in terms of my responsibility for my ministry. As DYSs, I was the divisional guard director, and so I had all of the cards, which they don't have today because of computers, but we did a lot of handwork of keeping track of badges and those kind of things. So I figured out a way to do that at home and to do it at night after the children were in bed. I'm not sure that I wouldn't figure out a more streamlined way to do it. Grading Corps cadet lessons was another big thing that had to be done. The other thing that I did was I felt like my house had to be immaculate. And so I probably would not spend as much time making it immaculate, just making it clean and making it attractive would be enough, without every week doing all the underneath stuff and the... It was heavy cleaning every week, which I probably did not need to do. And in this day, with all the nice gadgets we have and so on, probably I wouldn't have to do that. But I did that, and I maybe would not have needed to be that particular. I passed it on to my kids to a degree, and thankfully they are not as obsessed as I was. But... I thought family meals were important, mm-hmm. and so therefore I really, really tried to always cook at home, and I always tried to provide healthy meals and good meals so that my kids would be healthy and be good students, and they were. But I don't know that that's something that I would change. But I think that it's important because that establishes family life. If you sit around the table together at least once a day, it's impossible to, in this day and age, to do it three times a day. But at least once a day is really important. And I think that I would keep up that trend, but I might not be as
intense about the mm-hmm. particulars about the, of the house. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's good advice. Yeah. Anything else from your 40s?
In terms of ministry, in terms of what we did, we really kept up, but. Being a DYS is a difficult appointment because it's one special event after another for the whole division. And so it just keeps you thinking, it keeps you planning, it keeps you gathering things together all the time. And it is and being at meetings and conducting meetings and things like that. So it was a very... camps. I love camp, and to this day, I love camp. And until we retired, we lived on the campgrounds, and it was wonderful. And I loved it, and I loved being in charge of it. But it is a lot of work, and I may have turned some of that work over to someone else if I had been smart mm-hmm. and let somebody else help me with it.
Delegating.
Yeah, yeah. Delegating is important, and. That maybe that was an issue with me. It was hard until later. Mm-hmm. It was hard to delegate responsibility and to draw other people in and let them have their ideas and work them. Mm-hmm. Not mm-hmm. you know, not every idea has to come from me, I found out, and not every idea has to be worked out by me. It can be worked out by someone else and be just as good and just as effective.
That's great advice. All right, so let's transition into 50s and beyond. And that okay. was when you were moving more into a higher level of leadership in the Army. Is that correct?
Right. We went to be the training principals. We were DSs before that, and I found it wonderful to be the second lady in the division, and I enjoyed that very much, and enjoyed getting to know the DC, the Mrs. DC, and working with her, and I think that important. For me then was to learn to be the second person and to do it well. And so that's what I always tried to do. I offered assistance and suggestions when I was asked and so on. But I think that that's the best way to get along when you are the second person. We went on to be the training principal and... that was probably our favorite appointment, but it was not without its challenge. And as I said earlier on, just learning to handle. Here again, I realized the responsibility, and it was unnerving at times. But I cherish all the times when we entertained generals, and they stayed at the school, and... we waited on them, and occasionally I fixed a special breakfast because they were in an apartment and took it to them, and it just was a very rewarding time. And we had missionaries and folks that we were able to become friends with. And most of all, though, I think that now, in getting into the retired ranks, our cadets that we had, and it was just a beautiful experience to have that association with them. And I don't know what I would change about those years, or what advice I would give myself, except maybe to relax and not not worry that they might not become what they're supposed to be because of me or
the cadets,
mm-hmm. yeah, or that working with the staff was beautiful. We had so many wonderful times. And here again, I suppose that I have the reputation of lists of things, manual labor that had to be done for preparing for things. However, I don't know. I hope that most people felt that it was beneficial and not a burden. Mm-hmm. You know, while some would because they're not used to it and didn't have that kind of an appetite. Like one cadet told me, well, I was not brought up this way, and I have never lived this way, and I don't intend to. And I felt sad about that, and I said, well, unfortunately, this is what's required, and so this is what we'll do, mm-hmm. and we'll do it today, and I'll be back in a couple of hours to see how you're doing with it. And so those are the kind of things that make you feel sad. But
was it hard for you to say things like that, to really hold people to that level of accountability?
It was. I had to really think about it and pray about it. Sometimes you don't have a lot of time to do that, but I knew what I was facing most of the time. And in those early days, the first time we were there, I was the apartment inspector, and so some of my friends laugh today about some of the things that we would discuss. But as the training principal, when people didn't respond to the officer in charge of that, then I would go and have that talk. Mm-hmm. And so I found it difficult. Nobody wants to get after anybody. Mm-hmm. When you have to talk about appearance and you have to talk about things that would be offensive as an officer in the public or mm-hmm. to their
like
people.
Personal things,
yeah. Mm-hmm. That was difficult, but I found that I could do it, and so therefore mm-hmm. I did. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was the Lord's strength mm-hmm. and His giving me insight and a perception that was helpful. Mm-hmm. Some people changed and some didn't. Some changed only while they were there under our eyes, and which happens, I'm sure, today. And then once away from the school, it was different. Mm-hmm. And so, and we found that as divisional commanders going around, that these are the people that we trained, and mm-hmm. they know better. Mm-hmm. And so, so then you have to do it again, which, just
a little awkward.
Is
maybe.
Awkward, yeah. That's a good word. It's used a lot today.
It is.
Awkward. Yes, it was a bit awkward. However, we found later on as divisional commanders that one of the things that my husband said, and maybe I probably would say to myself, this doesn't matter as much as this matters. Mm-hmm. And my husband at one of our welcomes said, now, I look around the room and I see a number that we have had a hand in training. And he said, I won't remember those days if you won't remember these days. And so he was saying, I want to take you. Mm-hmm. I want to start with
fresh.
You is what he meant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say it as well as he did, mm-hmm. but that is true. You have to take people where they are and then work from there. And I hope that I always did that, but I'm not sure that I did. And perhaps I would say to myself, hey, just simmer and watch and then proceed. Mm. So we managed always to keep busy and never to look forward to retirement. We just there was just too much to do at hand. Almost to the last day, we were behind in our packing because we were involved in flood work and so on right up to the end. And so we never, you know, obviously we had to find a home and those kind of things, and we took time to do that. But not to say, oh, I'll be glad when this is over. I'll be glad when this is mm-hmm. over, because we loved being officers. However, I've always said to people who are about to retire, you know what, you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. You're going to love it. So it is good. So, Sarah, I don't know what I would have said to myself along the way, except just to constantly remember that people are important, the most important, besides your relationship to Christ and what you can teach them about the Lord. And last Sunday, the focus in our holiness meeting was sanctification, mm-hmm. was holiness, and our major made it very clear. And I love the word sanctification, because it means that we are set apart for Him. And as an officer, I always felt that I was set apart to do something for God. And the Holy Spirit would help me and get me through it, even though I was petrified at times and afraid. And some of the community things that you have to be involved with and so on really stretches you and pulls you right out of your comfort zone. As a child, I was shy. As a teenager, I was shy. And in my first job, I was quiet and shy until I was there long enough that I became the manager of the office, and then I began to stretch. However, officership really pulled it out of me, and I always used to think, I can't imagine, and my family, my siblings couldn't imagine the change in me after our first appointment, mm-hmm. back when I was in my late 20s and early 30s, because it did pull me out of my comfort zone many, many times, most of the time, and brought us to where we were when we finished up. And I hope I don't recede to be that, although I don't want to be loquacious and outstretched and so on, but I do want to just be able to still love people, mm-hmm. and to still make people feel included. Mm-hmm. So many times in our busyness, we can pass right by a person and they wonder if we've even seen mm-hmm. them. And so I think that from the youngest kid that passes me in the hall in Sunday school to the oldest person who comes into the meeting, I want to be one who will not be afraid to mm-hmm. to greet them and to say hi to them.
And you do a tremendous job. People, I see it every week, that she goes out of her way to make people feel welcomed, that they belong, and that they matter.
Well,
it's true.
I try. Years ago, I read this illustration in a book about a woman that made Hawaiian leis. And she made beautiful leis. And every week she made a lei to take on Sunday morning. And before she left home, she would say, Lord, lead me to the person to get my lei today. And she would take her lei, and the Lord would lead her to somebody who needed it. Who needs my lei today, she would say to the Lord, and she would give it to them. And so, you know, without the lay, I want to be the person mm-hmm. who at least makes somebody, one person anyway, feel welcome at the core.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mrs. Arnold, Marilyn.
Whoever.
I was saying Colonel, and should I be saying Lieutenant Colonel?
No.
I don't know.
Not at all.
You're the type of person that says, just call me Marilyn, which is a wonderful thing. Well, thank you again for joining me, and I I can't wait to get the feedback about this because this was a great episode.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thanks again for listening. If you remember anything, remember Mrs. Arnold's advice to put Jesus first in your ministry and then people. If you have any questions or special guest requests, please write to the Prepare Podcast at usc.salvationarmy.org. See you next episode when I get to sit down with Commissioner Polly Schultz.